Martinez scores!
It's time for our Monday Atlanta United recap with 92.9 The Game soccer analyst Jason Longshore on Dukes and Bell.
He is the man who's basically become our go-to guy for soccer here with United International Soccer, all things soccer, Brian McFadden, and for Carl Dukes today. Jason Longshore joins us here on the waitfor.com hotline to talk to us about what's going on. Punch him up for me, Craig, because my pooter is acting kind of funky. Hey, Jason, what's going on today, man?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, Jason?
Hey, man, we did let the cat out of the bag for those that had DVR at the U.S. Women's team, but real quick, what do you think of the match?
Spain's really good, first off, and I think a lot of the talk coming in was it's a foregone conclusion the U.S. is going to get to that quarterfinal against France and the difficulty that presents. But the Spanish team is very, very strong. The U.S. has got to produce more from the run of play. I mean, two penalties here. It was a very, very even game. Spain looked like they could have found another goal in it. The U.S. does enough to get through, but I think it's a bit of a wake-up call.
Speaking of that very, very talented game, I mean competitive game, talking about Spain, how talented they are, is the U.S., is this team the best in the world?
I don't think it's an easy thing to say at this stage. I think in the last couple of cycles, yes, you would have said that they're the most talented. This time around, France is right there with them. Germany's right there with them. England's right there with them. And then there's a next tier of teams like Spain and the Netherlands and Sweden and Canada that I think can beat any of the top-tier teams on a given day. It's the most wide open the Women's World Cup has ever been, and a lot of that is down to so many of these countries investing in development. The Spanish team, you look at them as individual players, outstanding technical ability. It's all down to that investment from the Spanish Federation and the pro clubs.
So the women do get the win, 2-1. This is all knockout round stuff, by the way, guys, in a round of 16. Jason Longshore with us at Longshoe. Now, I had really going back and forth, not much going on TV yesterday, so I watched a lot of the England-Cameroon match. It walked me through this. I mean, were the Cameroonians, were they being rude? Were they out of their minds? Or were they right to be so upset? Because VAR certainly seemed to really hose them over.
I didn't think it did. I don't think there was a thing that that VAR was wrong on in that game, was it? Close calls? Yeah, it was. The offside goal to start the second half, it was a foot. But offside is not a, well, it's close, so let it go. Not in the world of video assistant referees. You're on or you're off, and it was off. And the England goal that was looked at, the AR who put the flag up, was wrong. She was onside. So you take all that. My issue with that game and the way it got out of hand at the end was, now you have a situation because of the foul and stoppage time where you have England's captain who might not be available for their quarterfinal match because of a horrendous tackle in stoppage time, right? In front of the Cameroon manager who just stepped over the England player like she was barely there. That was the most disappointing part for me. All of the histrionics, I think a lot of it has been overblown.
Okay.
It's a tough situation for a team like Cameroon who has eight players playing in a top-flight professional league, and a lot of players basically play semi-pro or amateur, and they haven't been in these situations very, very often.
And that's the thing, if you didn't see it, guys, and if you're not a big soccer fan, in a nutshell, Brian, the players for Cameroon really lost their cool. There was some really, really salty play. One girl spit on an English player's arm.
Disrespectful.
Yeah, it just seemed like, and then they basically stalled twice, Jason, because they didn't like the calls that went against him. And again, VAR is still something relatively new in international soccer. We're all getting our heads around. But it seems like the stall tactic, it just seemed like it was a classless, it just to me, I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, but it really seemed classless.
Think back to the beginning of VAR in Major League Soccer, where you had a lot of bad reactions to VAR's involvement. Whether it was right or wrong, it was just a shock to the system because you'd never dealt with that before. Now you don't see that reaction when VAR gets involved. On the women's side, video assistant referees weren't approved for this tournament until mid-March. So the preparation has been really bad, and there is no professional women's league in the world that has video assistant referees. So no one's accustomed to their involvement, so there's a lot of overreaction to it right now.
So real quick, I want to get to United because I know Brian's got some questions about our team, but real quick, the Tata-led Mexico, that was a game against Martinique that was actually, first off, more entertaining than anyone would have expected, and maybe for Mexican fans, for all the wrong reasons, 3-2.
Yeah, a little dicey for Mexico. I mean, they had the group sealed up. They knew they were going through. Maybe they took their foot off the gas a little bit here. I thought the most interesting thing was Tata Martino getting the first yellow card for a coach now that that's approved. It's something we've seen in the high school game here in the U.S., but showing cards to coaches has never been a thing before. And, of course, it's Tata screaming at the referee who gets the first yellow card.
You like what you're seeing from the U.S. men's team?
Better. It's better. The Trinidad game was much, much better than the first game of the tournament. They have to continue to build from here, but they are starting to look far more comfortable than they did in the friendlies before the tournament and in that Guyana match.
Let's transition to the United. It's been a while since we've seen them on the grass. Will they keep the momentum next time up?
I think you look back to that Columbus match in the U.S. Open Cup where you had a lot of the lineup that should be on the field against Toronto, and we found out today that Ezequiel Barco will not be part of that match due to a couple of kicks he received to the knee in that Columbus match. That was Frank DeBoer mentioning that to the media today, and Doug Robertson over at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution had some more detail on it. One of those kicks was the one that Leandro Gonzalez-Pires was very upset about afterwards and picked up a yellow card for dissent.
Okay.
It's these types of fouls, though. And you see Atlanta United players, and it's often Leandro Gonzalez-Pires who's complaining to referees after these types of fouls, to Barco, to Pitti, to Tito Villalba, because it's very similar to the injuries that he's been dealing with lately. When referees allow attacking creative players to constantly be kicked out of the game, you're going to get these injuries and the competition's going to suffer, and teams have to deal with it now. Atlanta has to deal with Barco's absence.
That stinks, man. I know we saw it last year with Miggy, and for those that are not familiar, our guys compared to Brian, some of the guys you see in MLS, sometimes a little undersized. Mm-hmm. Now, not against LGP, but Barco's still a little guy. Pitti's a relatively short guy, and sometimes they just get manhandled out there.
Referees got to protect talented players. I mean, we saw this. Think back to the NBA in the late 80s. You know, this is what would happen. You'd go near the basket, and you're going to get just pummeled. And it took a while until the game started to be called differently. And some people want that kind of game. I like to see the talented players be able to showcase their talent.
Right.
But are we surprised, though, you know, if you're playing against a talented guy that's smaller than you, the best way to neutralize him is to be physical. I mean, that's what I would do.
100%. It is. And if the referee allows you to do that, yeah, 100% take advantage of it. You saw it today in the U.S.-Spain match. Spain committed a ton of fouls, and they weren't seeing yellow cards for persistent infringement. And that's what referees have to be strong on. If there's not an individual foul, if it's a bunch of fouls but not an individual foul that would deserve the card, but you're seeing these types of players, and it happens to Barco all the time, it happens to Pitti as well, you'll see them get fouled 5, 6, 7 times in a match.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous. You have to start seeing yellow cards when that happens.
Yeah, I agree with that. You got to keep things in perspective and also not allow the opposing team just to try to bully the talented superstar players that we have. Jason, give us an early preview what we should expect to see Wednesday when United face off against Toronto.
Well, I think with Barco's absence now, a lot of pressure falls on Pitti Martinez and Julian Gressel, who should be available coming back from some muscle tightness. He's missed the two Open Cup matches. A lot of pressure also falls on Brandon Vasquez, who will be starting up top, according to Frank DeBoer. He's been the hero in the Open Cup matches, and can he do that in MLS play right now? You flip to the other side and you look at Toronto. They have not won since the match in Orlando before they came to Atlanta, and that feels like forever ago back in May. They've struggled. They're missing a lot of players to the Gold Cup right now. Michael Bradley, Josie Altidor, Jonathan Osorio, Ashton Morgan are the big four that they don't have at the moment, and it's showing. I want to see how they come out and approach this. When they played Dallas over the weekend, they lost 3-0. They started with 5 in the back, and at halftime they went to 4 in the back, and the wheels came off. The defense looked really poor after that. I think they're going to have to sit back and try to defend. Even at home, I think they're going to have to get numbers behind the ball because they don't have much going forward at the moment.
It is Jason Longshore with us, guys, at Longshue on Twitter. If you've got more questions about the U.S. men's national team or United, anything to do with soccer, this is the guy's got the answers for you. Hey, by the way, the All-Star voting, we saw that all the Argentines are getting love. I presume there's some ballot box stuffing digitally. Joseph will be an All-Star, yes?
Yes, he was added to the team today. The rest of the full roster came out. Biggest surprise for me is Miles Robinson not being part of the team. Walker Zimmerman being part of the fan vote makes sense. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, part of the fan vote, makes sense. Matt Hedges from Dallas and Bastian Schweinsteiger were chosen ahead of Miles Robinson, and that feels like a bit of a travesty. Miles has been as good of a center back in this league as you've seen in the first half of the season. He should be going to the All-Star game.
Thing is, though, Bastian's a German legend, and he's got a really cool name. That's a great name, isn't it, Brian? Bastian Schweinsteiger. No question. Hey, Jason, you talked about Vasquez doing a great job in some of these U.S. Open Cup matches. Again, a guy that we didn't really get a chance to see much of in the past. Joseph, when do we get Joseph back, by the way, from playing for Venezuela?
We'll have to wait and see now because Venezuela will have a knockout round game, so he's not going to be here on Wednesday. He's not going to be here on Saturday against Montreal. There's a chance he's back for the Chicago match on July 3rd. Most likely, he will be back for that July 7th New York Red Bulls match, unless Venezuela makes a miracle run to the Copa America final.
Okay, big guy. And real quick, Messi, for all the great things Lionel Messi's done, age 32 now, one of the greatest ever dressed out, why does he seem to have always to stub his toe when he's playing for Argentina?
He's by himself. He doesn't get any support. And we've talked about it a lot when it comes to the Argentine Federation. They have been a mess ever since... go back decades at this point. He's just not getting much support around him. And now it feels like everybody in this team, no matter if they're stars with their club or not, they look to Messi to solve every problem on the field. Ooh. It's a ton of pressure. I think he has delivered. I thought he basically carried them to the World Cup final in 2014 and got them to back-to-back Copa America finals. He's not what he used to be, and the Argentine system just doesn't suit him as much as having so many talented players around him at Barcelona who can pick up the slack.
It is Jason Longshore with us, guys. He's brought to you by Heineken 0.0. Guys, it's great taste with zero alcohol. Try Heineken 0.0. Oh, by the way, you just mentioned Messi, so everyone knows Ronaldo, because it's always Messi versus Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. I saw Ronaldo tipped the hotel staff where he was staying on the Greek island $17,000 for keeping the paparazzi out of the hotel.
Hey, it must be nice.
Wow. Yeah, not 20, not 18, not 20, he's giving 17,000, whatever that is in euros, probably what, that's like 15,000 euros. Yeah. Either way, for keeping the media away, he had his kids with him and his super hot girlfriend.
Basically like a bodyguard, right?
Right. Yeah. Not a bad deal. Hey, man, Jason, we'll be listening. You and Michael have the call Wednesday, live in Canada, and hopefully we'll see some things and keep on rolling. As Brian said, we've got momentum. We don't want to lose it.
Yeah, you want to take advantage of these first two games, especially against Toronto and Montreal, have been struggling a bit. Need 6 points to start this busy month.
Right on, man. Thanks again, Jason. We'll talk to you later in the week.